Mr. Feakins, Reel 4. We were talking about your time with as the driver ACK of Gary Birkin prior to the Battle of Knightsbridge. Just to pick up a few points, because we're approaching that time now, but did you know much about the other two Birkins, his Ivor Birkin and Peter Birkin, I think the cousin, I'm not quite sure of the relationship.
Yes, Peter Birkin was a battery commander. And Ivor was troop commander. Ivor was a troop commander, my memory says, my whole D battery, I think.
Yes, D troop, which was part of 520.
D troop, sorry, yes, D troop. Peter Birkin I didn't see very much of, although I had met him, because the brothers would meet every now and again.
What did you think of him? Because he's quite a character.
Peter? He had the richest Batman in the prison.
What do you mean by that?
Very charming person.
And what about Ivor?
Ivor was... Whilst Peter and Gary were fairly light, Ivor was quite slight, my memory serves me right. And, as I said, he was a troop commander, and occasionally they would chat over the radio to each other, obviously, as a troop battery commander to troop commander. And his opposite number to me was Sergeant Harold Harper. He was the OPAC to the troop.
Now, did you know Harper at the time? I know you know him now, but did you know him then?
No, I didn't. Only as the OPAC, because they would lie behind us, because we were picking up the lines of sight, etc., for them. So, obviously, we never really got to know each other. And as I said earlier, it was sort of the lonesome five.
Now, the training period came to an end, and it seems to have blurred into being into the line, from what you were saying. You came into, as you were training, they came into an area where there were a German presence.
Bearing in mind, of course, that we were way out in front of the regiment. Way out in front.
I mean, how far? I mean, are we talking 10 miles or 50 miles? Or?
Oh, no. No, we were never there. Even whilst we were training, we were never more than 5 to 10 miles. Roughly. And if we would go forward to a great degree, because Gary obviously had a greater vision than I did driving up there, he'd suddenly say, "That's enough, about turn." And I knew by his action that we had already sighted outposts. Because it was often the case, and I've heard it other ways from other people, that we at the absolute observation post of the batteries, we would be in front of everybody. There, the Germans would be having exactly the same thing. We'd never, ever fight each other. We knew that they were the observation posts. And if we did, there'd be more of us, both sides, knocked out. So,
was that a known thing?
I'm not sure whether it was known or not. But you never engaged, when you were on your own, you never engaged other people, because you had no backup.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask about, you were in Marion Harrington Armoured Cars. Now, according to the history, which is not always right, at the end of May, they issued light honey tanks.
So, yes, I didn't have, I stepped to my, I think it was Gary Birkin's choice. The Marmon Harrington was a very fast, small tank. Very fast indeed, but capable of rolling over. It was very high. And I had heard before about these kind of things. If somebody's coming down the escarpment sideways, they just roll over. So I believe I'm right in saying it was Gary's decision that we would stick to the mountains.
You mean the honeys were very fast?
Yes, and my apologies. Yes,
I knew what you meant. Now, do you remember the situation on the 26th? Because 520 battery was separated.
That's right.
Can you, as you remember it, sketch in the situation? I know people often don't know the situation, but if you could say what you knew.
We moved forward quite a distance and separated ourselves from the whole regiment. I didn't know for what reason, had no idea. More than that, I don't think I can tell you very much about the 26th, except the fact that I thought Gary gave me a little gold Saint Christopher, little gold Saint Christopher.
Why? Do you remember? I mean,
in conversation, we often, Gary was, I would say, a very, very good Christian. Very good Christian. Not a Bible puncher, but read his Bible every day. And he used to say to me, "Oh, my dear Fiekin, it would do you more good if you read the Bible a few more times than you do." But we would sit and chat, because he had nobody else other than the four of us.
In what way? I mean, how formally or informally was it? I mean, he obviously called you Bon Dia Fiekins, but presumably called him Sir.
Oh, yes.
But what was it, military chat, or did it go on to being what you'd call normal?
Occasionally, when we were on our own, he'd say Bobby Fiekins.
And what would you talk about?
The church, Christianity. Belief, mainly, I would say, putting belief. And I think that's when I really got very fond of, as fond as a major could to a bombardier, but as a person, I thought he was a wonderful person. And his quietness, but in that quietness, there was so much strength, very strong.
Was he popular with the rest of the men in your tank?
Armoured car? He could have put me on the charge.
Why? Tell me about that.
We used to take, because we were so far forward, we had nobody else but us five. And at night, of course, we had to act as our own guards and sentries. And I know I hadn't slept. And this particular night I was on sentry duty. The other, and Gary would even take a turn. That's how good he was. I nodded off. I couldn't have dropped off for more than 5 minutes, or possibly less, I don't know. But I did drop off, and he tugged me and gave me a very short, sharp lecture on what could have happened. And that was it. He reprimanded me on that occasion. It was the only time it had ever happened. And he never referred to it again. As I say, I didn't sleep for a quarter of an hour, half an hour, or an hour. It was just a few seconds. I just nodded off.
Now, another thing you wanted to tell me was about some sort of conference that happened when a general, you're not quite sure who.
Yes, I'm not sure who it was, but I do remember it was just the battery commander, Gary, and myself, and one other person. Went miles, it appeared to be miles and miles and miles across the desert, for this conference that he had with this general, whoever he was. When we got to the conference area, we took him, and then we backed off so as not to hear or anything like that. And I always remember sitting there, and as I said to you very at the beginning, I used to love singing. I looked around at the isolation we were in the middle of the desert, and I started singing, "There's a Small Hotel," and "A Wishing Well," which was a song that was going around at that time. But we both burst out laughing and said, "How bloody ridiculous, hundreds of miles from everywhere, singing 'There's a Small Hotel' and 'A Wishing Well.'" Gary came back, rejoined us, and we went back to the unit.
Now, so I think we'll move on to the 27th now. According to the histories, you were detached in the Knightsbridge area, but away in the area where the Royal Gloucester Hussars, a tank regiment, were.
That's right.
In the area of a gap in the minefield round about Bir el Hamat, which you probably may or may not have known.
Yes, I do know the mines at that particular, and you reminded me, the colonel of the Gloucesters was a wiry New Zealander or South African, Aussie, the big pipe. And I remember Gary and he chatting. The 3rd and 4th CLYs and the Gloucester Hussars were with us. And on the 26th, they liaised with each other. And the battery was miles away by this time.
Now, Seely visited you. Do you remember that? On the night of the 26th.
That's right. And they chatted to the Gloucester Hussars. And this colonel of the Gloucesters.
I presume you wouldn't hear what was said.
No, although we were, I wouldn't say, not there much, because our vehicle just pulled up to the side. And the tank, the Gloucester Hussars tank, was just over there. But no, we didn't hear what was going on.
Was there any sign on the night of the 26th, as far as you were concerned, of what was happening? Because that's when the Germans started to move, although I suspect they weren't within range. But was there any sign in that you were aware of trouble brewing?
If one can say one gets a funny feeling in the pit of one's stomach, everybody in the armoured car did. Imagine we said, "This is it, we're going in again." And there was a feeling, the intensity, because we could see our colonel, Colonel Seely, Gary Birkin, and the colonel of them. They weren't standing till, and their feet were kicking the sand. You could see that, not tension, but there was sincerity going on between them. And we knew something was up, but what? I hadn't got a clue. That was in, I believe I'm right in saying, late afternoon.
Of the 26th?
Yeah.
Did you stay with the battery that night?
Yes, we stayed just a few yards in front of the battery that night.
Did they dig in? Because Seely ordered them not to, apparently, but...
No, we didn't dig in. The only digging that was going on, the chaps going to the loo. It was the only digging that was going on.
And did you sleep all right?
A little difficult at this late day to remember.
Do you know if you were nervous? This would, I mean, some of them had been in action before, but this might well have been
first action.
Were you nervous?
No, I don't think so. No. No, definitely not, no. I did, because of what had gone on with the colonel and that, I did check with the radio operators. I said, "Is everything in order? Everything working as it should do?" "Yes, good." Then we sat around, bedded down. Gary said a prayer, as he always did.
Was that to himself or to the crew?
He would just say an issue to the crew, but he would say his prayers to himself, just a little bit of that. But he knew, obviously, what was going to happen. We still didn't know, but we had our own thoughts on that. We woke up earlier the next morning, as usual, moved off with individually with a spade, lured, so as not to catch the smell, and back, and I remember Gary Birkin going, "Come on, Bob, here, quickly, quickly, we're on the move." I had no more chance, just dive straight in, start the engine, and away. And we moved quite away. As I say, I can't remember how far. It was quite a while.
Which direction would you know? Was it towards the
south? South.
Did you know what
possibly
was happening?
Possibly south, southeast.
Did he say anything about why you were going in that direction or what was happening?
No, he just said, the words to the effect, now, there is a possibility we might come into action. I know you'll do your best. End of story. He was up through the top. I had pulled up when he told me to stop. And when he said, "Turn the car around," and I knew something was going to happen, because we were facing back the way we came. And I'd had, on a couple of occasions, I'd had trouble with the engine. For some unknown reason, the distributor cap would come loose, and the engine would stop. And it stopped on the trip up, which worried me. So I got out and made it very secure. And he said to me, "Is the engine all right, Mom, dear?" And I said, "Yes, it's absolutely." He said, "Good, I don't want any mucks up this time of the day." And that's right, he got his glasses out. We were both checking the map. I can't remember what we were saying or doing at the actual time. But he was up there, and he said, "So many thousand yards, and that's battery, from battery, not from us."
To but what? Had he sighted any enemy or Germans?
He sighted a lot of dust.
So this range was a range from the battery to the dust?
To the dust.
Estimated.
We were getting firing lines. And as often, even in training, he would not test me, but see if I was wide awake. He would do it and come down, and I would verify what he'd reckoned. Could have even been a bush or whatever. 500 yards, 100 yards, just to check that we were in unison. And
so you were stopped facing towards this dust.
And he was up through the turret, and he came down, and he said, "Bombley, would you just check this?" He came down, I went up, shell landed a bit behind us. He said, "Whoops," for words to that effect. And then I said, "Oh, sir, quick." I came down, sat in my seat, and he went up. The next round came straight inside the armor car.
What were you getting him to look at? Just something else you'd seen?
I thought I'd seen the an absolute vehicle moving in direct line towards us.
Rather than just dust?
Rather than dust.
So the second round hit your armour fired by the...
Well, as I say, I think it must...
Second you saw?
The second that I saw, bearing in mind that I'm inside the armoured car. The banging was going on outside.
So what happened when the shell hit? Where were you and where was the rest? What happened?
I had a map on my lap. It was, you know, facing the front of the vehicle. He is here, up through the turret, looking at the back of the turret, the firing line, facing the Germans. And I just asked him to go up, and as I sat down, this round hit. I didn't realize it had hit us, and I turned, and there's two radio operators without heads, absolutely nothing from the shoulders. I had blood and muck all over me. Gary slumped into my arms, and he was actually dead at that point.
Where had he been hit?
Right in the tummy. In the abdomen, I would say tummy, in the body. And I was wounded in the legs. And I thought, well, I'm no good operating as a two-man band.
So you, I just want to correct, because the thing says, the book says that you were unhurt, but that's not the case, obviously. That's a mistake.
It is a mistake. There was one person unhurt.
Now, who would that be?
One of the radio operators.
Would he be the one who was behind you?
That's right.
So the people who'd been hit or killed were...
On the offside of the vehicle. And Gary, who was in the centre of the vehicle. I had both windshield armour up. So if it was a whole shell, it went straight through. Because if I'd had those down, it would have hit and then gone round and round in the vehicle. But I had them both up.
So what happened next? You're saying you knew you couldn't carry on as a...
Yes, so I decided to make a dive back to the battery. And I was bleeding profusely all around my legs. And I said to the chap, I didn't even look around, I said, hang on, we're going to dive. And I rushed, tried to put my foot on the accelerator because I was losing the strength of my legs. And I hit a split wrench.
So the truck was still going?
Yes. I slammed it into gear to get the hell out of a sitting duck position. And my thought went through my mind, let's get back to the battery. Because we knew where they were, obviously. And the armoured car just went whoosh, straight into the slit trench. And I can assure you it was a very nasty smack because everything came forward and the seat hit me in the back. That's the back injury. And I turned around, there's nobody there. I wondered what had happened. I crawled out as best I could, pulling myself out. And I was hanging on the back of the vehicle when Sergeant Harper had seen we'd been hit. He and I think I'm right in saying two others, maybe only one other, came racing across to us.
Birkin is supposed, Ivor Birkin was supposed to be one of the ones that came across.
Could be. I think he was came the third. Either two came first and then he came.
Now,
they'd been hit as well.
They were out with you, were they?
They were quite a long way away. We could see them, but not within talking or shouting distance.
But they'd seen what had happened.
They'd seen what had happened, and Sergeant Harper came across. I have to admit that I suppose I must have been in a bit of shock, because they were headless bodies. The inside of my armoured car was just nothing but blood and flesh, and bits of body, all over the place.
Someone had radioed to Harper. That wasn't you, from the sound of things.
Yes, it was. I'm sorry, it is.
You managed to radio?
Yes, because the other's been killed.
It wasn't the other radio operator that was behind you?
Not to my knowledge.
When had you done that? Before you started to drive? It's difficult for you to... I appreciate this.
I've got a... Before I started to drive on the intercom into battery radio, I said, we've been hit. I remember saying that that's because I turned round and there's nobody there. I'm the only one in the armoured car.
What had the presumably the corpses were still there, but the other signaller had gone.
Yes, and it was only when Sergeant Harper came and he went round the front of the vehicle, and the other signaller was in the slip trench. He was in the slit trench underneath the wheels, front wheels of the armoured car, and I had actually broken his leg with the impact of going over him. So I don't think it could have been him that sent the message, because he was already out of the armoured car.
I think one of them says, I think it may have been Harper, that you were in a terrible state when you raided, understandably so. Were you in shock then? It sounds as if you were.
Oh, I must have been. I didn't think I was. You can never judge yourself what you are.
How bad were your legs?
Pretty bad. I regret losing strength.
Was it fragments that hit you? Or?
Yes, I've still got fragments here. Not even today. All around here.
That's a series of wounds in the left knee, shrapnel wounds.
And here.
Behind the left knee.
I've got a slit up here where they took. I had the last big operation I had done in 52. I removed a piece of shrapnel about an inch by an inch and a half out of this right thigh. And as I said, after the shell had 88mm, we judged it to be. It just, I was hanging on to the back of the vehicle, and it was Sergeant Harper's presence of mind. There were only four people there. Where's the fifth? He went round to the, because the vehicle, of course, was down on its nose, and he went round and managed to get the vehicle off the signal.
That's gonna right, I think, from the sounds of it.
That's right. I wasn't happy about that. And then, of course, Sergeant Harper's trying to help me. There's no help he could do for the others. And Ivor was there. And a Gloucester, who's our tank, had already opened up in action. And Ivor said, let's get aboard.
Now, this is because their tank had been, Harper and our Birkins,
Ivor Birkins' vehicle had been hit.
So that was out of action as well?
That was out of action. We couldn't get to his because it was no good going. I believe it was on fire.